What if we spoke honestly, took a moment to view this thing from an employee's perspective and talked about what could be? Analyzed what is to come from the love of the restaurant. Well, you'd have this podcast. Welcome to Behind the Restaurant. As always, I am Jerry, your loving and lovely host of Behind the Restaurant, and I welcome you back to another episode with me. So, for today's podcast, I thought we would delve into a topic that I've kind of briefly articulated before, and I've gone through in different ways before, and I think it deserved another rehash now that I'm at taking this conversation from a different perspective and coming at it from what I feel is a better angle. So in the previous incarnation of Behind the Restaurant, we talked about delivery services. And we talked about what their impact has been on the restaurant industry and the field as a whole. And it was more from a perspective of, is this really good for the restaurant? And not really finding it to be that good for the restaurant. So for this one, I thought I'd give it another chance and just talk about how delivery services have, in a way, helped to keep the restaurant industry afloat. Now, I want to be very specific. I'm going to come at it from an angle of New York City as a concept because I'm not too prevalent on what other services are used across the country. I know Uber Eats is nationwide. I know Seamless is in some part and Grubhub. So yes, while these companies are available everywhere else, I don't know how their impact has been in those particular places. So if it does correlate, then that's great. If it doesn't, then I apologize. That my intent is just to speak about them as a whole and how they are beneficial and where they are lacking, and also where I think restaurants are lacking and where they might may need to make changes backwards instead of forward. First of all, delivery services. As a breakdown, what is a delivery service? What are we talking about? As I mentioned, there's Uber Eats, there's Grubhub, there's Seamless, DoorDash, Caviar, and a plethora of others. Back in the day, there was Delivery.com. You could order through Yelp. Facebook has the ability to allow you to order through it. And the most prevalent delivery service, if you go back 20 years, was the restaurant website, which is still relevant for a lot of restaurants, but it's not as prevalent as it was before because it used to be. In explaining my delivery services concept conversation, I have to explain what it used to be. When I started in restaurants in 2000, which is now 21 years ago, in that 2000 era and 2000, you know, between 2000 and 2005. Almost every restaurant that did deliveries had a delivery team. They had their own group of people. They had their own group of riders and staff. Orders came in over the phone or they came in through the website. And you would print them out, pass them over to the chef or whoever was putting the orders together, and then you would get them ready and the delivery staff would take 2, 3, maybe 4. Your range was 10 blocks east, 10 blocks west, 10 blocks north, and 10 blocks south. That was the scope of what you would do for deliveries. You wouldn't go farther than that because you needed your team and your group to be able to get back quick enough. Because if you gave them 5 orders and all the orders were on the east side, it would take them a while. Because delivery in New York, even though it's only 5 orders, still takes you 15 to 20 minutes an order. to get there, to communicate with the person picking up, to drop off the order, and then to come back. If you did only one. If you do five, it takes you an hour because you're getting there, getting things together, dropping off, coming back to your bike, going on to the next one, doing that same routine until you get through. So lunch would start at 11 and would be over by about 3 o'clock. So you had a 4-hour window, and each delivery driver would do 5 to 8 on a great day orders per hour. Like if they were really good, they would do 8. So let's say they average out at about 6. So 6 orders an hour for 4 hours ends up being 24 orders. Doesn't sound like much. I know and I understand this, but back in this time, the tips were much better. The ordering places were much better. The amount per order was much better. But I say all of this to say, this was the birth of a lot of these delivery companies. And at this point, we weren't seeing normal people take the orders, pick them up, and drop them off. That wasn't what delivery service was back then. You had a staff of, I don't know, 8 at lunchtime and then 5 at dinner time. So a staff of about 13 delivery guys who weren't regular staff in the sense that they didn't take orders. They didn't put orders together. They didn't do anything of that nature. All they did was get the orders ready, take care of their delivery areas, and get the orders out. As long as they did that, that was more than enough. So I got into the industry at around 2005, late 2005. So at this time, Seamless and Grubhub were two dominant portions of the industry. There was delivery.com, as I've said, and there was ordering through the restaurant's website. Most orders came in by phone, on the website, or through Seamless or Grubhub. Mind you, at this time, Grubhub still wasn't even that big in 2005. They weren't. And Seamless was basically a corporate entity, meaning they would deal with the companies because a lot of the orders ended up being grouped together. Seamless was a great platform for the fact that if 20 people in your office ordered Seamless, and they ordered within that time window, Seamless would group every single one of those orders together and send them to the restaurant they ordered from. So if 10 of those 20 people ordered from one place, boom, those 10 orders went to that one place. And they still do that a lot. And I think that's probably one of the better and most, you know, that's overall one of the better ideas that came about. Just that grouping style and that way that they did their platform was honestly the most intelligent at the time of allowing the restaurants not to get overloaded. But Seamless also was individual orders. And where I worked at that time, there were a lot of... In 2005 to 2010, I worked for a restaurant that was located in a prime area where there were a good amount of residentials and there were a good amount of companies. So during lunchtime, you were busy with the orders from the companies, and during dinner time, you were busy with the residential orders and the leftover orders from companies who were still there and eating and had corporate meal plans and things like that, which was honestly one of the best parts. They had a budget for how much they could spend per day, so if they didn't hit it, they would put it on tip. B, they were a guaranteed order almost every single day. And C, this was straight up income that came in at a great amount. Now, I can't tell you what their percentage take was. I can tell you what it became later on from the restaurants I worked 3-4 years after this point. But this was the toddler stage of delivery services. So at this point, everything's very corporate. everything's very, okay, we're ordering multiples. Everything's very in-house. You have your own staff. So at the end of each shift, at the end of each lunch, between the hours of 3 and 6, you only had one delivery guy on. You didn't have multiple. You ran with that one guy because there weren't more than about 2 or 3 orders that came in per hour. And you cashed out the guys who were there before. And when I say cashed out is you would go through how much they made cash and then how much they made in tips and credit cards. You would subtract the tips and credit cards from the cash, and that difference would be how much they would need to give to the restaurant to compensate for the fact that cash orders had been put through. Because tips needed to be paid out right then and there. We kept track of it, but they needed to be paid out at that moment. But they had to pay back the cash orders that they had in hand. So they had to keep track of their receipts. You tallied up their receipts. You put all that together. And I honestly think that's one of the reasons that delivery in-house went down and went away. It's like, there's so much extra to having this staff here. I learned much later on, that a much bigger extra is the taxes and everything else that a company has to go through and keep track of and then pay out. And that was one of the bigger reasons that there were companies later on in my career that did not operate with delivery staff in-house because they didn't want to deal with the taxes that came from tips. They didn't also want to deal with the accounting that came from tips. They wanted to deal just with the paying of staff and the day-to-day operation of the business. So you had a lot of non-deliveries, even though they took deliveries. And yeah, but okay, so we'll stick to the 2005 to 2010 range. This, to me, was the golden era of deliveries for restaurants. They weren't paying out to all these different companies. You didn't have an Uber Eats, a Caviar, a DoorDash. You had Seamless and Grubhub, but Seamless and Grubhub weren't taking the high percentages that they started taking later on. And you had a lot of orders coming through phone and personal websites for each one of the restaurants. Places made money off of this. Like, in comparison now, there are some restaurants where I cannot order unless I am ordering through Uber Eats or Grubhub. Which, I will tell you, for a restaurant, that's a mistake. That's a big mistake. Yes, you should have Uber Eats and Grubhub. You should not go away from that platform allowing you to get connected to these customers. But you should also have a website where people can order from. Because you draw them in with Uber Eats or Grubhub, but you make your money from keeping them and having them order from the websites. Because screw it, your percentage that Uber Eats, Grubhub, and places like that take right now is insanity. Insanity. Because they take on both sides. This is something that I don't think a lot of the customers and regular people who order realize. Uber Eats takes from the restaurant the percentage of their order. Usually, from what I've seen and what I've done the paperwork for, it's about 30% on average. So these companies are taking 30% from an order. So let's say the order is $15. They can't take from the tip. That's illegal. They can't do that. So the order is $15. That order gets 30% taken off of it from the restaurant receiving side. So the restaurant only gets back out of that $15. The restaurant loses $4.50. So that's $9.50 that the restaurant only gets from that one order. That's a huge amount not to get back. Then the people who do the delivery, they only get paid out a percentage. Now, Uber Eats is messed up in the fact that they don't have a base amount to how much they're going to give you for every order you take. No, you only make a percentage of what the order costs. And I still can't say for sure if you're getting the amount based on after or before. So let's say the order is 15 and you get on your end 5, 10, 15% yourself. That's only $1.50. So it's, and then you get the tip if you get tipped. And during a pandemic, you getting tipped is, yeah, it's not as high, even though it, I wish it was, and most people do. But besides that, so the point is between the 2005 and 2010 years, the reason a lot of restaurants were very successful when it came to deliveries was because they kept everything in-house. I apologize for detouring, but I wanted to make a point with regards to that. Now, I would say between 2010 and 2012, 13, this switched because a lot of restaurants didn't want to keep having the responsibility of doing their orders in-house. They didn't. And you could see this because ordering off of websites, store, restaurant websites shifted. They changed. There were a lot of people that were redirected to order off of Grubhub or Seamless. Now, if you notice, at the beginning of the era of Seamless and Grubhub, I need to explain that there weren't huge service fees for people to order from them. There still aren't. The service fees are applied when you order further and further away. That's where a lot of things change, and that's where a lot of restaurants have adapted. They have gone to the system of using these companies because they can have a more ranged out delivery service, and they don't have to worry about it getting there. So you have people, random people, anybody, Jim Bob coming in and going, "Hey, I'm here to pick up this order." To show you the phone, boom, they pick it up. And they take it 30, 40 blocks away. When your zone used to be back in the day, 10 blocks in each direction, a nice little square. That's why you had concepts that would open up multiple restaurants every 10 blocks or so, because you had this range that you were trying to cover and overlap over and over and over again. Which was smart. I liked the idea and the thought of that. Now it doesn't matter. They open up wherever, whenever, and you're ordering from whichever one you want to order from, as long as you're willing to pay the fee because you're ordering from that far away. That's the way Uber and a lot of Grubhub and all the things, their service fee isn't always because they want to add that additional cost. It's how far away are you, and we've set up this fee structure from you being this far away. That's the restaurant that's trying to make some of the money back. So I don't have a problem with that, because if you're ordering from far away, it's going to take longer to get to you. So you're paying for a convenience anyway. Get over it. Don't get mad at that. The thing is, why the shift became that they stopped using their own websites. What's the cost? I've never understood, and I still can't, you know, wrap my head around it. Was the cost that much for you to have your website and have an ordering through that you went away from it and just allowed people to take 30% of your money with using, you know, Uber Eats and Grubhub? Or have you reached that many more people that it's more beneficial for you to use these platforms and the cost, you know, negates itself? It confused me. But there was a transition for a 2 to 3 year period where restaurants went away from a lot of the things that made them who they were and allowed them, in my opinion, to make real and good long-term money, and went to this belief that, oh, we need to use these systems because these systems will allow us to reach more people and do better. Another example, like the first one I worked, the company I worked for from 05 to the 2010, they were using Seamless as an addition to things they were already doing. Now, when I transitioned to a company in 2014, in 2014, when I transitioned to that company, they were only doing order through their website and phone orders. Still, mind you, this is nearly 4 years after the last place I left that was using everything in combination. They didn't want to use Seamless and Grubhub because of the costs. The district manager ended up telling me, "We're going to transition to this. So that was part of my responsibilities in the restaurant, is help them transition. I've come from a place where I worked under the umbrella of Seamless and Grubhub, and I knew how this would work and what we would have to do. And the transition and the thought wasn't too hard for me, but I also knew that if you wanted to do this right, the amount of delivery drivers you had wasn't enough to accomplish the things you wanted to accomplish. It didn't work. That wasn't something that worked. You needed to have more staff and be able to send people home versus having less staff and being stuck, not able to make the deliveries that you need to make to go forward. Like, that became something in my head where I was like, are you kidding me? Why are we operating with such low amount of staff? This isn't going to work, especially when we're already showing that we need all the staff we can get to work deliveries through the way they are. And I felt that the system of the way that you would put through the orders, get them made, and get deliveries done was always a little bit backwards, especially with such an in-house madhouse that we would have Monday through Friday. Like, lunches were busy. Lunches were busy. And deliveries could, when run through the same streamlined system, could mess up and backtrack the whole thing. And that became annoying and a pain in the ass and a bunch of other parts of it. But this company, this restaurant transitioned. So it moved away from online only and phones only. In the year that I was there working them through this system, they went from 1 week not having Seamless or Grubhub or anything to the next Monday having Seamless or Grubhub and telling everyone who would order on the phone before, no more phone orders. We are only taking orders through Seamless and Grubhub. That became the push. And that was a huge push. It was like, what? I'm sorry, what? We can't order over the phone anymore? No. You can only order through Seamless and Grubhub. So you're telling people that they got to create an account. So if anybody didn't have a Grubhub or Seamless account, you got to create one. That's where you need to order from. That's how you're going to place your orders. That's how you're going to get to us. That's how, from now on, we will make your deliveries. And you had no software integration with this company. So the orders through Seamless and Grubhub wouldn't automatically go and print out. And I've worked for a couple companies after that and before that where Seamless and Grubhub integration softwares were part of it, so that when orders printed, they would just come to you directly. They would be made and you would know that they were here. But no, this wasn't something, that wasn't the way it worked. That wasn't how it was. A lot of backwards setup to it. You didn't increase staff for the fact that this was going to now be busier. You didn't push things forward. It was a lot of backward, slow moving, and inability to adapt to what was coming new. So, now mind you, this is 2014 through 2015. By the end of 2015, going into 2016, more moves had become and had started. Like, companies were coming out of nowhere. You had everybody trying to make a name for themselves and trying to become the next big thing. Because at this point, you had Grubhub and Seamless in New York. Once again, I need to remind you, I'm strictly talking to New York, and I'm giving you the transitions that happened. At this point in 2014, Seamless and Grubhub were the dominant factors. They were the ones that had control over almost everything. Uber Eats, while it was around in 2014, did not really make its big transitional impact, in my opinion, until about 2016. In 2016, Uber Eats became so dominant that you had a ton of other companies come into the forefront. You had DoorDash, who started becoming bigger at that point. You had, shoot, what is the name of that one? I hate when I can't. Oh, Postmates started to be bigger. And you had an influx of ordering apps that started to make their dominant way into these things. Like, you can order your food through an app from almost every single freaking fast casual restaurant that there is imaginable, and even fast food restaurants. But the transition, so let's go back. 2005 to 2010, almost all strictly in-house systems. You had an in-house delivery people, you had orders through phone and your website, and you had a smattering of seamless web. Transition number two was in the 2010 to 2014, you had the uptick of Grubhub and Seamless joining forces. You had the uptick of those services. You had a ton of transition in the company where, in restaurants, where it used to be 70%, in 05 to 010, 70% of the people that came in, 70% of your sales came from in-house services, 30% came from deliveries. In the 2010 to 2014, my belief is that that transition started flipping. And by 2014, I would say that deliveries were of a higher percentage than in-house services for fast casual and fast food restaurants. Well, not fast food. They weren't up to that yet. And then in 2016, you had a complete reversal and influx of Uber Eats delivery systems. You had DoorDash, you had Caviar, you had Grubhub, you had Seamless, you had all these companies, and now they were creating their own platform to have their own delivery services. People who they would pay to do the deliveries, to come up and do everything for them, and that's what they would go through. And, you know, that's how it transitioned. By 2016, restaurants had gone away from having dominant control of how they did their deliveries, gone away from having people in-house to make deliveries, and had completely transitioned into the world of, oh, Uber Eats and Grubhub will make the deliveries for us. And you're going to get charged 30% of your order. How's that beneficial to you? I don't... Which one was the first restaurant that said, fuck, that's the way to do it? Like, and why? I want to know why. Why did you make that transition and say, hey, this is better than completely having our own ordering system? And why did you go to, hey, I don't need to have an online ordering platform anymore? Like, I want to speak to somebody that made that transition and said, hey, this is what we're doing, and this is how we're going to do it. Because that, to me, is astounding. Truly astounding that that would be a thought you had, and you would say to yourself, hey, this is the right thought to have for the long-term purposes of my restaurant. And you wouldn't see the side effects of losing 30% of your profit and income. Like, it baffles me. Because I think one of the most wasteful industries is the restaurant industry. For all the inventory bull that they give off, oh, I inventory this, it is probably one of the most wasteful industries there is in the country. Like, so many things get just brought in and disposed of at the same time. And I'm not even talking about food. I'm talking about services, and money gets thrown off just from the possible idea that something will work for a minute. And no actual thought is put into it on how much you're losing. So the willingness to lose 30% on top of that astounds me. And that's not to say that there isn't benefit from Uber Eats or any of these other delivery companies. There is extreme, huge benefits from this. But they don't outweigh the benefits of keeping an in-house kind of service that allows you to make your orders and make your money more than that. Like, damn. Just damn. So, but I say all of that now that we're in 2000. Between 2016 and 2020, delivery in-house services, gone. It is very rare that you will find a full team set up to do deliveries. Like, Uber Eats is the only one that doesn't allow a restaurant to deliver the food that's ordered. Grubhub, you do not have to use their delivery services. Seamless, you do not have to use their delivery services. I think DoorDash, you have to, and Postmates and stuff like that, you have to. But for the other ones, no. They send in the order, and it's up to you to decide whether or not you're going to use a delivery service through them. Basically what it is. And at this point, 2021, we are in 2021, where delivery services are an astronomical, you know, profit insanity that they are. There should be a shift. You're never going to go 100% back to the way things were. And that's not the way you make things go forward. But you need to start seeing that with this pandemic, with the way everything's going, you're not going to be coming back to even a 30% in-house probability. Your max, maybe, on a good week, is going to be 20%. And if you're only at 10 from in-house, that means your delivery needs to be 90 and it needs to be at an all-time high level. And in my idea, you need to go back to having a form of in-house delivery to compensate for a loss in one to still have a gain in another. Because the reason that Uber Eats can get away with charging 30%, 35%, or even higher sometimes, is because they're doing everything in one. They are taking everything away from the hands of the restaurant. They are saying, hey, you no longer have to worry about any of this. We will take care of all of it. Just give us 30% of the order. Oh, also, we charge you a fee for using our services. Oh, yeah, you didn't know that? Yeah. There's a fee and you give us 30%. At some point, with 90% of your services being delivery, you would think that that would mean you would transition into this thing called in-house, which could be more beneficial. I'm just saying. You have to pay attention, and I think this is one of the hardest parts for a restaurant and for most restaurants. Stop only paying attention to what people want to eat and start paying attention to how people want to be served. Restaurants transition very quickly in certain aspects. Tracking their inventory, keeping up with their orders, keeping up with their menus. Restaurants can be very good in those aspects. But keeping up with change and transitions on how things should be done now in comparison to how things were done 2 years ago, not as much. There isn't a huge transition in the technology that's used. It's a lot of similar stuff, just different company name. There isn't a lot of transition into how delivery platforms should be used for your own benefit because they believe they're making some kind of money. You're going to have to come out of this pandemic on the other side of it, understanding how you can build this thing for yourself. Being a restaurant person, that's going to be one of the most important things. How do you build this for yourself? Now, I'm never going to say that I have the belief that I know how what's the best way to do this on the other side, because even I'm confused on where this goes in the next 5 years. But I will strictly say where it has been and where it's still moving. Deliveries are an astronomical portion, and they represent a huge amount of the way restaurants are going to be profitable long term. So with that, like, when you want to open a restaurant, when you want to do these kind of things, and anybody who's listening and thinking of what's my best way forward, guys, think about what benefits you the most. You're already trying to make more than 51%. after all your costs and everything, why would you add another cost that's going to bring that chance down when it could be applied in other places and in other ways and bring you up? I'm just saying. So, this has been my little conversation about the delivery platforms. Look, they're lovely. They've done great things for the industry. And especially during this pandemic, they've helped to keep a lot of restaurants afloat. That, above all else, you need to understand that if it wasn't for these delivery platforms, a lot of restaurants wouldn't be in the places that they are possible to be right now. Hasn't been pretty out there. There's been a lot of concepts closing. There's been a lot of locations deciding that they don't need to come back. And because of that, the ones that have stuck it out and have transitioned and done very well with these platforms and made themselves bigger and better need to start realizing that they need to start thinking about how do I transition again? Because there is another transition that's coming. There's going to be the after the pandemic transition. And that one is going to be 10 times more important than the transition into the pandemic. Because you're already in it. There's no more transition there. Your next one is 10 times bigger than the one you went through already. And that's how it has to be thought. And most of these concepts needs to start thinking about this now. Because, yeah, it's here. And there's a lot of news and stuff with regards to it and regards to that. But you need to now start thinking about, oh, this could not be here in the next year. How do I move from that? What do I need to do? How do I come back and get the people that might still be a little tentative? Or how do I make more money now? How are you not transitioning currently? In your mind, how things are going should not be good enough, even if you're making money. It shouldn't. And because of that, you need to start seeing what's next. I thank you, everybody, for listening. I cannot wait to speak to you on to the next one. See you next time. Peace!